My dear brothers and sisters, I'm very glad to see you again. I can see new faces also. So this center's growing. That means you have newcomers that I didn't see in 2011. Yes, so I saw so familiar faces when I was here and they were near the retreat. So I'm really very happy to see you again. I've been asked to give a Dhamma talk. Because today's Mother's Day, well, all days are Mother's Days, according to me, at least in my book. I don't know about you. Because that's where I came from. So that means every breath is from is Mother's Day. Every breath is Mother. Spells out Mother, because, yeah, so, but anyway, I understand the concept. Anyways, we have to designate that day, specific day. That's fine. So I thought of talking about not all qualities of mothers, but one specific quality that stands out for me, that I remember very well. I remember so many qualities, but there's one thing that touched me so much. When I was in Uganda, I was still a little boy, and I was staying in a very remote area in Uganda. And in that place, they had bed bugs, and this was called bed bugs, and there's something else that I don't know. What this thing that jumps?
Leeches.
Yeah, leeches. And the house was made of adobe, actually. Very deep in the village. And then, in the middle of the night, I woke up like this. It was at 2, around 2 a.m. And mother was sitting on my bed. What is she doing? And she was getting one by one. One leech, one by one. That's what I remember now. I mean, so many things I remember, but that one for me sticks out. She could not sleep because maybe also she was beaten. And then she thought of, for me, I was actually deep last sleep. When I was younger, I liked sleeping. Bed bugs would not wake me up. And leeches. But anyway, my mother was fast awake, and she was actually trying to relieve me from the pain. So as I was, we were going through this discourse, I found something that relates to mothers.
Yes.
Very, very beautiful. Mata yataniya putta ayusa eka putta anurake evampisa babute sumana sambhavaye aparimana. Even a mother, even as a mother protects with her life, her child, her only child. So, with a boundless heart, should one cherish all living beings? For me, this is very, very powerful, actually. One would think only human mothers, but I've seen actually all animals. It doesn't matter which kind of animal, even elephant, big elephant. I remember one time I was in Kenya, and we were in a park, actually Tanzania, and we were in a Land Rover, and then we met an elephant with a young one. The young ones are cute, actually. The young elephants are amazing. Yeah? So it started charging because it wanted to protect the child. So same with lion, leopard, it doesn't matter. So it seems that mothers embody this quality of compassion and pali karuna, and I thought of talking a little bit more about it. But since it's also a month of Vesak Day, we have to remember Budhamdru. Hari Hodai. One of the qualities of the Buddha is actually great compassion. Maha karuna. And they say that if they are to bunch all the qualities of mothers around the world and you put them together, they are nowhere closer to the Buddha's quality of compassion. And for the Buddha, it is called great compassion. In fact, the Buddha, every day, he would wake up in the morning and search and survey around the world who's somebody who is really suffering, and he would go there. Every day, that's what he was doing. So you can see from the Buddha, then down to mothers, and also other people. I'm not saying that fathers are devoid of compassion. That's not the intention. I'm just giving some, or even monks. Yeah, in fact, oh, nuns, this don't get that like that. Don't get that. I'm just actually giving an example. Right? Don't also think that Jesus didn't have compassion. Probably had also compassion, but I'm just really giving two examples of mothers and Bodhisattva. So they have great compassion, and I thought, let me talk about it. So the Pali word is Karuna, and it's a thought. Compassion is a thought of non-ill will. And also here, they say it actually here. This is what they say. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the sky and downwards to the depth, outward and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. So compassion actually is the opposite of cruelty. It's the opposite of cruelty. This is a very high state of ill will and hatred. If hatred and ill will exceeds limits, it goes into cruelty, where you actually harm others verbally and physically. The opposite of that is actually compassion. But here's the unfortunate part, that the word compassion in English doesn't do justice to the Pali word Karuna. But we just have to be satisfied with it. Compassion, compassion, literally, prior to came from Latin, it would mean with the suffering, to be with the suffering. But that's not what we're doing for us in Buddhism. We are not only with people who are suffering. It goes beyond that, actually. It goes beyond just when people are suffering. So we have to use compassion as a foundation for ethical conduct. That should be our motivation to practice the five precepts at the minimum. It's compassion that is going to motivate us. So that means in Buddhism, even when people are, of course, they're not suffering, like have a disease or whatever, still we should have compassion, because it's a foundation for the practice of ethical conduct. It's also the foundation for the practice of concentration. If you want to gain concentration, you need to practice compassion, karuna. Because the opposite of that is cruelty and ill will, and you cannot gain concentration when you have ill will. So for us, you see, the word karuna goes beyond beyond just being with people who are suffering, or human beings, or life forms that are suffering. It really goes beyond that. And also compassion is also a foundation for the development of wisdom. And in fact, when you track down where the Buddha taught compassion, is part of right thought. Thought of non-cruelty is part of right thought. So when you look at the Noble Eightfold Path, there's right understanding and there's right thought. So those two factors of the Noble Eightfold Path is part of what you call wisdom group. So then actually the practice of compassion is also a foundation for the practice of wisdom. And in many ways, compassion is actually should be balanced with wisdom. They should go together. compassion without wisdom, and you get what you call compassion fatigue. So you are going to help and pour all your money and all your resources, and you actually have nothing. And then before you know where you are the one who is suffering. Then other people have to have compassion with you. So you're going to create a lot of like a vicious circle. Yeah. So it's really very important to have compassion with wisdom. Not only wisdom, but also mindfulness, actually. So in fact, compassion without mindfulness, then you're going to either ways. One is what you call pity, self-pity. Oh, this person is suffering. Oh, what can I do? Then also you start suffering because you don't have enough mindfulness to contain compassion. Then you have what you call near enemy. Pity, self-pity, disguises itself as compassion. It masquerades itself as compassion, but actually it's self-pity because there's nothing, not enough wisdom, there's not enough mindfulness. On the other side, if we practice compassion without mindfulness and without wisdom, also we can go any other way. What you call the far enemy. It's quite the opposite. In other words, we become more cruel. We become more cruel. So we need actually to have wisdom. I see wisdom and compassion as both wings of the bird. Both wings of the bird. When it flies, it needs two wings to fly. There's a common quote that I would like to share with you, that compassion is wisdom in action. Right? Any kind of compassion, if it's practiced very well, it's actually wisdom in action. And if wisdom also practiced very well, it's also compassion at rest. Right? It's compassion at rest when you practice wisdom. If you start with wisdom, still you're practicing compassion. It's compassion at rest. This is very important for us, this distinction, because there's a tendency of people saying, oh, you meditators, you're not doing anything to help the world. You're just sitting there, breathing in and breathing out. Who's going to benefit from your breathing? Do you know who benefits from your breathing? I get those kind of actually comments in Uganda. It is an Australian in Uganda. Aussie. There's an Aussie there. He settled in Uganda. And we were friends because you know that I'm a Buddhist and he's a Baha'i. And then one time he told me, hey, come on. Actually, his son is a Buddhist in China somewhere. So he said, well, I would like to take you to see the island. I bought an island in Uganda. He's well connected with the government. And then I sat in his car. So I knew that I'm going to miss lunch, so I got some chapati. I started eating. I gave him some. And said, no, eating. I ate. And then as we were driving, he made a comment. He said that, you see, I like Buddhism actually. I really like Buddhism. But I don't like monks. They don't contribute to the world. So all what they do, they meditate. Uganda is very poor. In fact, you should start contributing to the economy. Because when I was staying at his place camping, that time there was no temple in Uganda. I was camping in my mobile temple, actually. Mobile temple, which is actually it is a tent, which is actually not waterproof. So I used to camp at his place and I wasn't doing anything. And what I was doing is doing walking meditation, walk back and forth, sit inside. And he saw that I was very unproductive, actually. Very unproductive. Some people would come as I was doing walking meditation. They said, oh, what's happening? Have you lost something? At one time I nearly said, please leave me alone. Because every time I attempt to do walk, people ask me, have you lost anything? Can we help you? So I decided not to do walks there near that place. I said, okay. I'll go somewhere walk quietly without anybody seeing. So anyway, this person observed me, this Australian, actually observed me so well. And one time it rained in Uganda. And this tent is from Thailand, actually, as I told you, is not waterproof. It got wet. I remember that time they rain, it rained at 3 a.m. I had to wake up, you know. Then I just stood on the veranda. Then mosquito bite me. I donated a lot of blood that night. That's the night I remember very well, where I donated blood to a mosquito. So then in the morning, I woke up and I put my tent because it was wet, so I decided to dry it. Then one English guy said, "Oh, you, I heard about meditation, but you are a good, accomplished meditator. You meditate in that tent which doesn't touch the ground?" So because they didn't see that the tent was actually on the ground, so during the time I put it off the ground so that the ground can dry. So it was actually suspended. So they thought I'm such an accomplished monk who doesn't do anything and meditate in a tent which doesn't touch the ground. So they thought I'm a levitator, actually. Again, not contributing to the economy of Uganda. So now, I told the Australian, he said, "You know, have you been to Thailand?" Yes. "You know, I'm only one monk in Uganda, but in Thailand, there are thousands, 40,000 monks, I don't know. I don't know the exact number. Somewhere maybe, I'll get the number next time. Maybe over 100,000 monks are in Sri Lanka and Thailand and all." So those countries are more developed than Uganda. Why do you choose me not to contribute to the economy? If monks don't contribute to the economy, then Thailand will be the poorest country, and Burma and Sri Lanka. So anyway, this is a big thing. Most people think that when you meditate, you are actually not practicing compassion. But in a meditator, when you sit here and meditate and practice meditation, actually you are practicing compassion in action. That's one less person confused on the streets of Melbourne. How many, what's the population of Melbourne City? Maybe 4 million? Yes, that's less one person confused. That's compassion. You sit here and meditate. So anyway, here's the message. It doesn't matter where you start. I remember one monk is called Ajahn Sona who was asked, "What's the difference between Mahayana and Theravada?" Then the monk replied, "Oh, you know, there's a big difference. Theravada begins with wisdom and ends with compassion. And Mahayana, big vehicle, it starts with compassion and ends with wisdom." Quite a big difference. So anyway, the message is very clear. You can start with the wisdom. If wisdom has mindfulness, it will take you all over to the practice of compassion. And also compassion, when you practice with mindfulness, you get wiser as you practice. So that means when you practice this teaching, as you see yourself from Buddha, long time of practice and teaching, these practices are connected. Actually, if you practice properly, these practices are really connected. They contribute to the purity of mind. They contribute to the purification of mind, and the mind will be free from attachment and ill will and ignorance. And it will have the opposite: metta, loving kindness, compassion, and understanding. During my travels in Australia, I learned something. It's a strange that I had to come from Africa to learn something in Australia, pertaining to Africa. Of course, there's so many things I learned in Australia. But there's something that I learned in Australia that actually pertaining to African philosophy. I was in Sydney recently, and I went to meet some friend asked me, "What can I do for you?" I said, "Oh, you know, take me to the Museum of Aborigines. I'd like to see how they live, how they, their history. Because for me, I know they came from Africa for sure. And also there's a documentary film there, we know, from a scientific proof. Then I saw there something very interesting about the land, how they view the land and their totems. And because also I have a totem, my totem is an otter. And then I had it, I have totems also. And the reason why they have totems, that meant that they don't eat some animals, actually. When you have a totem, you're not allowed to eat it. It's a taboo not to eat your totem. So I had that. It was an act of compassion. Yeah? So that at least there will be people who don't eat, let's say, cow. Then other people, at least they will have some food left, you know. So that's also, I think, the act of compassion. Yeah, when you look at it deeply. And also they had this kind of proverb, protect your country and the country will protect you. Are you familiar with that? That's from Buddhism also. When you practice, you practice the Dhamma protect you. When you protect the Dhamma protect you. This is also with, actually part of Dhamma. But specifically what I learned recently when I went to visit a monastery, it's called Sunyatarama. What's Sunyatarama? There's a monk who was in Egypt, and he brought so many sculptures, paintings and all that. There was one paint which had a balance with the two sides like this, the old one, like this. It has two plates like this. So according to the ancient Egyptians, their philosophy, they had gods, they believed in gods and all that. So they had a philosophy whereby after somebody's dead, there was a god who judged during what they did in their life. So they had a feather, the god determined whether this person is going to heaven or hell by using that balance. So he put the feather on one side and the heart on the other side. If your heart is heavier than the feather, hell. If your heart is actually lighter than the feather, heaven. For me, that's very profound. And that's precision. We're talking about precision. I don't know if you know the feather. It's very light, actually. Then when you look at the heart, I don't know whether they waited until it dried. Flesh one definitely will weigh more than the feather. So this is very interesting, actually. This is very interesting. Because we sit here, actually. Here, we sit. Here, this is what it says, not the feather, but it says something very interesting here. It says wisdom, mind, recollection, binding. Okay, yes. The teacher Anupagama Sidava, the Sanena Sampano, Kamis Vinaya Gate, and Nahija Pigabaya say, I'm permitted to say, by not holding on to wrong views, the pure hearted. What's this pure hearted? I think pure hearted means light heartedness, right? That's where it comes, I think, to be light hearted, isn't it? Heavy-heartedness will be actually the opposite, isn't it? Impure heart. Which means it has cruelty, ill will, and all these things. But pure-hearted, it doesn't have wrong views, doesn't have ill will, doesn't have hatred. So you can see the connection. I think Buddhism must have gone to Egypt also. But for sure, those who know about Buddhism, Dhammapada number one and number two, Dhammapada, number one and number two, it talks about Manopubanga Madana, Manoseta Manomaya. All actions are led by the mind. Mind their maker, mind their chief. Act or speak with an impure state of mind, and suffering will follow you as the wheel of the cart follows the foot of the ox that pulls it. That imagery is very, very important. Because when an ox is pulling the cart, do you think it's always empty? Do you bring the or the ox to pull an empty cart, that means that it will be heavy. It will be with merchandise, probably full. Those who come to Sri Lanka from Sri Lanka, Burma, and India, and all that, you are aware of how the ox is carrying heavy things. So you can see whenever you act out of impure state of mind, which means lack of compassion, lack of metta, which means ill will and anger and all these things, then you have some heaviness, burden, weighing over you. So this is very, very important. Mothers, I found them light-hearted as I was growing up. Light-hearted. Now, also we can look at the distance, of course, but I think the idea here was heaviness. But let us also look at the distance. There's a distance between the wheel of the car and the foot. Definitely, there's a distance. So that distance, it seems that one would think that maybe the wheel will not catch the foot when you see it the first time. But as we wait, time passes, maybe a few seconds, the wheel of the cart will actually step into the, will follow always the foot of the ox. So this is very important. But what is really important is Dhammapada number 2 regards the Egyptian philosophy. It's a manopubangamadama again, all actions are led by the mind, mind they make, mind they achieve. Actors speak with a pure state of mind, that means with compassion, loving kindness, and generosity, and wisdom, and the happiness will follow you as the shadow follows you without ever departing. Now, we are here seeing again a shadow. Who has ever had a problem carrying their shadow? Raise your hand. It's so light, isn't it? It's not 1 pound. I mean, it's zero weight. So you can see the lightness that is expected with somebody who is practicing compassion, loving kindness, and wisdom. So again, we see the connection of lightness. The heart is expected to be light. That's why the Egyptian philosophy had that measurement. Of course, you don't have to measure this. Don't worry about the measurement. There's nobody's going to judge you to go to hell and all that. And moreover, anyway, hell and heaven is not permanent, according to Buddhism. So, but what's really very important is to see the connection between the Egyptian philosophy, which is the ancient civilization, and also the Buddha's teaching. There's a connection, I think. There's a connection. So now, the practice of compassion, how is different from other tradition? Because for sure, every tradition has compassion. Whether Christian, I was born as a Roman Catholic, we practice compassion. They give a lot of help. In fact, now in Nepal earthquake, there are many Christians practicing compassion. Many Buddhists are practicing compassion also. But I think what stands out in our practice of compassion in Buddhist tradition is that compassion is a basis and support for the practice of ethical conduct. The basis and support. We use it as a basis and support for other practices. Not just giving money because people are dying. If there is no aspect, still we actually will practice compassion. Still to Nepal. So it's not only when there's a catastrophe that we respond, that all time when we practice Buddha's teaching, the Noble Eightfold Path, we can see the motivation behind that is compassion. We have practiced with the Noble Eightfold Path so that we can overcome suffering. We can overcome suffering with the practice of compassion. And we can help alleviate suffering with the practice of compassion. According to Buddhist psychology, compassion is defined as this quality of the heart and mind that actually quivers when it is faced with the suffering of others. But I would put also a footnote that also, not only others, but also oneself. Because if Buddhist teaching is to function very well, it has to be for oneself, for others, and both. It has to meet that criteria. So now, as I told you, this is very, very important. If somebody will ask you, Are you a Buddhist?
Yes.
What do you practice? Compassion. And you say, oh, also we practice compassion. What's the difference? Actually, I'm challenged a lot. In Uganda, recently I was there. Somebody asked me as I was trying to register the organization to renew our certificate for the next 5 years. Somebody asked me, can you teach me something from Buddhism? And I saw we practice generosity. And he told me he's a Christian. And he said, oh, also I practice generosity. What's the difference? Tell me something new. Then I saw we practice compassion. And then, also we do that. Oh, then we practice loving kindness. Oh, Jesus said that love your neighbor as you love yourself. There's nothing new anyway. Don't teach me anything because there's nothing to learn. I said, oh, what can I do with this guy? He went to learn something new. So I said, oh, okay. I said, do you know what you are? I said, I'm a human being. So I said, what are you made of? I said, I'm made of the heart, body, and so. No. You're made of 5 aggregates of clinging. And then I said, okay, he said, what's that? I said, okay, you say that Buddhism is the same as your religion. I thought you know what you are. So then I explained the 5 aggregates, rupa. Then I said the form, feelings, perception, mental formation, and consciousness. What are you talking about? That's what he said, what are you talking about? I said, yes, that's Buddhism. I'm going to break it down for you. I said, do you know consciousness? He said, yes, I know consciousness. I said, how many kinds of consciousness? He was blank like this. He said, oh, I'm aware, consciousness. I said, okay, no, there are 6 kinds of consciousness. Consciousness connects the eye consciousness, nose consciousness. I said, that's too much. That's what he said, that's too much psychology. But actually, what I really helped him because I was getting into so much into Buddhist psychology, I told him compassion is different from your compassion, actually. But when we practice compassion, because the good thing actually for me, I was born as a Roman Catholic. When people ask me, I know where they're coming from. They want to challenge me, actually. They say, in other words, what they're trying to look for is, why did you have to leave Christianity and become a Buddhist? Why bother me? So anyway, I know what they actually are looking for. Precisely by the time they start asking me questions, I know what they're looking for. I told them that compassion is different. The one I'm practicing now is that compassion is a basis. Those are very, very important words. Is the basis and support for the practice of sila. Because also we have the 10 commandments in Christianity. And for us, we have only 5. They are more than us. that means they're better than us. But I said, it's not about who's better or worse, but it's just for us, we practice compassion as a basis and support for the practice of ethical conduct. Sila. That's our motivation behind the practice. And then I continue. We practice compassion as a basis and support for the gaining concentration. For us, we need to practice compassion so that we can calm our mind and meditate. I said, is that what you do? I said, no, that's not what we do for us. We just give those who are poor all these things. So for us, actually, we want to practice it so that we can gain concentration also. And then I went further. I said, we practice compassion as a basis and support for gaining wisdom. For gaining wisdom. Because when you have compassion, you become wiser because you are getting to know the truth of the first noble truth, suffering. You get more to understand it. And the more you become more compassionate, the more you become more compassionate. So then you say, okay, yes, I like to start advertising Buddhism. I like everybody to learn this. Yes, now I think every time he comes, okay, oh, you're a pastor, please teach me something. So he's actually very happy. Now we are good friends, actually. Before, I thought that he thought that Buddhism is really nothing, it's not deep and this kind of thing, because they don't know about it. He said, you know, start teaching in schools. Actually, that's what he told me. You know, Venerable, now start to get a space in Kampala where you can actually rent a space in Kampala and start teaching people. I'd like to help you to market your program. So I think this is wonderful to really understand deeply this teaching, compassion, because everybody wants to be free from suffering. It doesn't matter which religion, everybody wants to be free from suffering. But what I think I found out, I think from my experience, Buddha did it very, very well. He gave a very, very good method how to practice compassion. In other words, he gave us the address and the GPS. I think that's the difference. When the Buddha gave us the address of compassion, he said, okay, he said that, go, that's compassion. He said, okay, hey, wait a minute, this is a map. This is how to get to compassion. He gave us a GPS. That makes me very happy about Buddha's teaching, because we have a way. If you got lost and all that, you can retrap yourself, okay, there's a GPS. Because the way they are spelled out in the Noble Eightfold Path, the entire Noble Eightfold Path is motivated by our compassion. Why do you practice in the Noble Eightfold Path? Right understanding, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. Is that you want to be happy and you don't want to suffer. I've seen in my traveling around the world, I just come from teaching Brazil for 3 months. Before that, I was teaching US for 3 months. Most of those people are not Buddhist, actually. Most people I've been teaching for 3 months in USA with Joseph Goldenstein at IMS and all that. Most of them even don't want to call themselves Buddhists. But they are so much dedicated to the practice. There's a guy from Germany, he said that after the 3 months, I'm going to even go to the forest refuge, which is the next center to meditate. So it's very clear that this teaching is not only for Buddhists. Oh, people don't want to suffer. They want to be happy. In fact, even an insect, the smallest insect, I've made an experiment with the smallest stick, not to harm it, but just to block its way. And I saw the insect as it was walking, the smallest one. As soon as it sees a small stick, it goes back. We're talking about an insect, how much consciousness it has. So in other words, it seems that the common denominator of all beings, irrespective of the religion, tribe, country, and all that, we all want to be happy. We don't want to to suffer. In fact, that's what Buddha taught. I teach one thing and only one thing, suffering and the end of it. He said, I didn't say, I teach only one thing to Buddhists and only one thing to Buddhists. No, he taught all human beings. So you can see Mother's Day is very, very important to remember the quality of compassion, whereby actually we are going to practice compassion in action. First, we have practiced compassion in thoughts by radiating our thoughts towards all beings by repeating. We can come and meditate, or we can meditate in daily life. Before you start breathing in and breathing out, right, you start actually reflecting, like, may I be free from suffering and its causes. May all beings be free from suffering and its causes. So you do that mentally, and then actually that will make your heart and mind lighter. Because I think most people don't do these things and then they start meditating, in quotes, observing the breath in and out, but still there's some kind of heavy-heartedness. Either they parked in a place or they didn't find a parking spot, somebody parked in their place, and then, why is this person always parking in my space? And they kept on looking for the parking spot, and then they get disappointed. They come here to sit and start watching the breath without a little bit of making the heart and mind lighter, then they watch the breath. So what they do, actually, they are really like wrestling with the breath. They start wrestling with the breath, fighting with the breath. Who's going to win? I think you don't like that. So we start meditation actually by cultivating wholesome thoughts and calm ourselves through the practice of compassion. Even metta, loving kindness. May your beings be well up and peaceful. May I be well up and peaceful. May I be free from suffering and scolding. And may all beings be free from suffering and scolding. So we mentally do that. That's the first practice we do, mentally. And then we actually go to the what we call verbal level. During our speech, also we continue to monitor our speech in our relationship with our friends, with co-workers, in our family. We start to speak. What call right speech? Speak what's truthful. Speak what is we speak kindly, and also speak speech that is conducive to harmony, and speak meaningfully. That's compassion. If you do that, because that's actually the next factor of the Noble Eightfold Path, it should be very easy to remember. Just practice right speech, which is abstaining from telling lies, abstaining from harsh speech, abstaining from divisive speech, abstaining from meaningless speech, useless speech. Why are you doing that? It's out of compassion. So we practice compassion on a mental level, we practice compassion in speech, and then in action. In action, it means be generous, keep the five precepts, right? Be generous, help those who need help, and I don't have to go talk so much about it. I know you are all doing that, but I think what I wanted to share with you is that see compassion as a basis and support for the practice of the ethical conduct, and then concentration, and then mental development, mental cultivation. So it's not just something hanging out. And the message I give you, if you are to practice Buddha's teaching, don't pick it out of context. If you don't know it, go in a book and find out where did the Buddha talk about compassion. Then you go to the Noble Eightfold Path. So you try to, your best, you try your best to practice other teaching associated with it, like mindfulness, wisdom, and other. So then you find other places. Is about the four Brahmaviharas, where the Buddha talked about the compassion. Oh, it's in a package. The package is called the Brahmaviharas. Then, when you practice compassion, have metta, a little bit of a dose of metta, and then another dose of mudita, appreciative joy. Then another dose of equanimity. Then nothing will go wrong. You have proper practice of compassion. So with that, my Dhamma brothers and sisters, this is a little bit of talk. I've been talking a lot in my travels. My voice is not that good, but I wanted to talk about what's called compassion, and to remember on this Mother's Day how mothers have great compassion, because that's where we all came from. We all came from that, from our mothers and fathers. But the mothers have this quality of compassion, which is so touching, actually.